You're listening to a National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program podcast. The National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program is funded through grants from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, in collaboration with the National Policing Institute and the Institute for Intergovernmental Research. The points of view and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the podcast authors and do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. Here's your host.
Thank you for joining us today. My name is Rob Beidler. I'm a retired undersheriff from Snohomish County, Washington. I have just about 30 years of law enforcement experience. On behalf of the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program, which is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Justice, I want to welcome you to today's podcast on law enforcement roadway safety. Our guest today is David Florey, a 36-year veteran of law enforcement, having served as a police chief in both Bedford, Texas and Hot Springs, Arkansas. He's a full-time lead instructor in the BJA Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Program, as well as a program advisor and instructor for the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program. Welcome, David.
Well, hey, thanks, Rob. Good day to you and all of our listeners out there.
Fantastic. It's great to have you here. David, I know this is an important topic for you. Could you tell us what our national law enforcement officers can do to keep each other safe on the roadways?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. It's good to be with you as well. Today, Rob, I'm going to talk about how we as either executives, supervisors, or especially street-level officers can hold each other accountable and thereby create a culture of safety within our agencies and ultimately reduce injuries and deaths in our profession.
I'm going to jump right in here with a two-part question. When we talk about a culture of an agency, who sets that culture? And secondly, what do you think of when we talk about a culture of safety?
Everyone helps create the culture in an agency. It extends from the chief or the sheriff or the colonel in the state police agency down to the newest officer. Culture is defined as the customs, feelings, habits, practices, really whether positive or negative, that have been adopted by an agency. And a culture of safety is one where everyone is expected to adhere to proper practices and habits that exhibit and promote safety. So we need leadership to inspire officers to stay safe, Rob. Leadership can be the chief, a sheriff, again, a captain, lieutenant, sergeant, or any other formal supervision. Of course, they have to leverage their leadership and they need to lead. They contribute to the culture of safety. So if you're in a position of formal leadership, and those of you that are listening today, here's my message to you. You must lead. And you have to lead by example. Wear your seatbelt, control your speed, do not drive and text, and show others that safety is a real priority in your agency. If you don't have a policy regarding pursuits, emergency code response, mandatory seatbelt use, distracted driving, etc., then you may want to consider all of these. There are multiple outlets that can advise you on a model policy regarding any and all of these. But that culture of safety also includes peers setting a good example for each other.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, David. You know, it's funny. We say over and over again, we just need our leaders to lead. When it comes to safety, leading down that path, there's nothing more important. Can you talk about your pals concept?
Yeah, Rob, thanks. You know, you and I are pals. We're friends. We're colleagues. We're pals. We get along well. We know each other. We're workmates. We're buddies, if you will. We've actually known each other for quite a while. And we work together as pals. We're friends. And just like people do in law enforcement agencies, officer to officer, shiftmate to shiftmate, etc. And as we talk about leadership and them holding their subordinates, leaders holding their subordinates accountable, equally important is peers holding peers accountable. You know, Rob, executives and mid-level supervisors can only do so much. You know, policies, procedures, leading by example, etc. But you know as well as I do, having worked in law enforcement for as many years as you have, it's really the peers, those who work together day in and day out, night in and night out, that are the best in a position to hold each other accountable. I mean, I know you know this. It sounds good on paper to think that we all have the courage to confront a coworker, someone that is actually equal to us, but you have no formal supervision oversight over them, and you tell them to put on their seatbelt, ask them why they're not wearing their body armor, etc., or just tell them to slow down. That sounds simple, But in reality, it just doesn't happen very often, except in really, really rare or extreme circumstances. PAL stands for Peer Accountability for Law Enforcement Safety. PALS denotes a visual, the concept of my pal, my coworker, my friend. Like you and I, Rob, it's actually built on the concept of giving each other permission to be held accountable and actually being courageous enough to allow it and to do it. And I can tell you that the permission part is the absolute key. If I tell you face to face and in writing as my pal, as my coworker, that I give you permission, I'm asking you to hold me accountable. And PALS officers that have been through the program, that have been through the training, share a very unique bond. And they recognize each other, their fellow officers, if you will, by a hand gesture that they may communicate between themselves, or by wearing a patch, or by a lapel pin that they may point to remind the other person that, hey, you've been through the training and so am I, so let's hold each other accountable. So let me ask you, Rob, do you feel more comfortable, or would you feel more comfortable or even more encouraged to say something to me, again, if I actually gave you permission ahead of time?
Yeah, I absolutely would, Dave. I really would. And the funny thing is, I might even, you know, feel more of a sense of obligation and duty. You know, that's me, you know, doing everything I can to get you home. I might even look harder for, you know, for those opportunities. So yeah, absolutely. It would help me with that courage, those courageous conversations, that stop work authority, if you will, when I see something that could put you in danger.
You know, yeah, Rob, accountability partnerships work in a lot of different venues. They work in groups of people that work out together, all kinds of business settings, etc. I mean, I know you, and because I know you, I know your work ethic, I know your mindset, and I know your passion about safety. And I know my other peers as well. I really believe that other officers in law enforcement, if they're given permission, I know they can do it. You know, you're right, Rob. I took a poll on social media quite a while ago, and I asked the same question to some of my law enforcement peers and colleagues around the country that I've worked with or have known over the years. I've actually done this with students that I've taught before. I've asked countless classes of students. I've said, would you hold each other accountable if you had permission to do it? Would you actually feel more of a sense of obligation to hold someone accountable if they gave you permission ahead of time? Would you feel comfortable in doing that? And pretty much everyone says with a very resounding yes that they may still feel a little bit uncomfortable confronting a peer, but that if they're given permission ahead of time by that peer, and with, say, a signed contract or a document, for example, that everyone agrees to, then yes, they would participate in that program and actually hold each other accountable. I really think that they would do it. I think that if agencies that are listening to this process, this podcast right now, if they hear about the process and understand it, I think they'd be much more likely to participate in it. So, Rob, we just need more accountability within our law enforcement agencies. You know, if officers are driving too fast, if they're not wearing their seatbelt or their bullet-resistant vest, if they're driving distracted, they just need more accountability. It's our job at whatever level to do that, to hold them accountable. We need to speak up. If we hold others accountable, whether it be to a professional behavior, for example, or to the topic at hand, roadway safety issues, I truly, truly believe we can be much safer out there in our workplace. So to those of you that are listening, get with your peers. Here's something that you could take away from this podcast. Here's something you can do today, tonight, tomorrow, or your next shift. This is something that doesn't cost you anything but giving away a little bit of your pride and permission to be held accountable. So be courageous enough. It just might save your life or the life of a fellow officer.
Well, Dave, this is absolutely great information. And I couldn't agree more. Peer-to-peer accountability is powerful. And I love this concept. It's something that we all hope that we've done and our peers and leaders have done in the past in our organizations or our current organizations. But formalizing it, I think it's a great idea. Let me ask you, what about conducting after-action reviews or even looking at near-miss data? Can either of these things help reduce traffic-related injuries or deaths? You know, moving on to a slightly different topic here.
Yeah, absolutely, Rob. I truly believe all that is true. With your more than 30 years experience, you've done plenty of after-action reviews, I'm sure, on different kinds of calls, different kinds of instances, whether it be a fleet accident or any number of critical instances. I know you participated in those up in Snohomish County, Washington. I know you believe in doing those. And I always think it's healthy to review our work, whether it's good or bad, because we can learn from our mistakes and our successes. We need to look at our performance in the realm of looking for things done right and any missteps that could have been done better, and then taking those lessons learned and applying them to future behavior. I know of agencies that have had accident review teams that assess things done correct and things that could have been done differently. You know from those backgrounds, like in SWAT and so forth, and in command and control of major calls, those kinds of teams, they understand the lessons learned from AARs or after action reviews and the review of any kind of major incident. So yes, after action reviews, AARs, are very beneficial. Officers also have access to the law enforcement near miss database, and it can be found at leonearmiss.org. Now, this database is funded by the COPS Office and was developed by the National Policing Institute in collaboration with other law enforcement organizations. You know, a quote, near miss is a situation where an officer could have been seriously injured or killed, but harm or death was averted. And just like our own after action reviews, we can learn a lot from looking at those other agencies' experiences. Agencies or individual officers can submit information anonymously if they want to remain that way regarding any type of incident. It can be a use of force case where someone was almost shot or stabbed. Or on today's topic, it could be a near miss incident regarding something related to a roadway incident, like a struck by incident or a collision. For example, an officer can submit a case where they were almost struck by a vehicle while they were standing near a traffic lane while on a traffic stop. As officers can read about those cases and apply those lessons learned to policies, practices, and safety protocols. So I encourage those listening to check out leonearmiss.org and see what others are experiencing and learn how to prevent future instances.
Yeah, you know, Dave, that I'm really familiar with the program and the website. In my organization, what we did with our FTO program was every single day, our FTOs and our trainees, the beginning of the shift, would review LEO near miss info. I mean, the life-saving potential is fantastic, you know, keeping people out of trouble before it ever happens by learning from other people's experience. And then what we had them do at the end of their shift, they talked about near misses. Did we have any? You know, that was their after action review. And not only did we have any, is it something that might be helpful to another organization? And then they actually go into LEO near miss and then put in their own story. So I would encourage everybody to go to LEO near miss. It'll teach you how to become a participating agency, and you'll be able to share your stories in that near miss incident. And who knows, you know, you'll never know it, but you just might save a life someday by doing it.
Yes, the LEO near miss database and any of those kinds of near misses and discussions about near misses never are intended to disparage or criticize an individual officer or an individual agency, but we can certainly learn from other people's near misses. And I'm really, really proud to hear what you and your organization did when you were there about submitting information and downloading and reviewing information. Like the near miss database, we can all learn from each other with the PALS concept as well. Every one of us has experiences and knowledge that can and should be shared to stay safe in this career. I know that you're a huge advocate and a former National Academy graduate like I am. And I think one of the benefits from those kinds of programs, for example, is being with peer officers from around the country. You know, you're comparing notes about what you've experienced and what happened to your organization and what happened to you personally as well. I think that applying those what-ifs in your brain about what would I have done differently if I were in the same situation, and we can play those things in our mind, and we can learn how to share different behaviors by learning from other people. So, Rob, I think this about wraps it up. So for those of you that are listening, please, please wear your seatbelt, slow down, and please don't drive distracted. And again, be a pal. Seek out a friend. Seek out a coworker. Give a handshake. Figure out a way to hold each other accountable.
Wow, thanks, David. You know, I really appreciate these are very important tips regarding traffic safety related injuries and deaths associated with law enforcement officers all across the country. It's all important. It can all help get somebody home one night. I want to encourage all of our listeners to visit the website for the National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program at leoroadwaysafety.org. You'll find a lot of great information there. There's data referenced in this podcast. You'll find things like technical assistance, roadway safety resources, available training, all free to you. So again, thank you for listening, everybody. Please, please, please be safe.
The National Law Enforcement Roadway Safety Program is dedicated to providing training and technical assistance to state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies with the goal of reducing the number of officers injured or killed on the nation's roadways. For additional information regarding the program, please visit leoroadwaysafety.org. That's leoroadwaysafety.org. Or send us an email at tta@leoroadwaysafety.org. The Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, and the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, is committed to making our nation's communities safer by developing programs and resources and providing grant funding opportunities to support state, local, territorial, and tribal criminal justice efforts. All are available at no cost. Please visit www.bja.gov to learn more. This project was supported by grant number 2018 DPBX-K005, awarded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the U.S. Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, which also includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, the Office for Victims of Crime, and the Office of Sex Offender Sentencing, Monitoring, Apprehending, Registering, and Tracking, or SMART. Points of view or opinions are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice.